Now, the US media, continuing a little bit of a media theme this week on Saturday Extra, it is still licking its collective wounds after the election of Donald Trump caught many journalists out. They were so sure that Hillary Clinton was on track to be president. Now, in a political climate unprecedented in the US, as we've been hearing, media outlets are looking to bridge the ideological gaps that have emerged so starkly in that country's population. Shannon Bond has been looking at some new media initiatives that caught our eye. She's the US media correspondent for the London Financial Times, and she's based in New York. Welcome to the program, Shannon.
Hi, Geraldine. Thanks for having me.
Now, I gather the very fact you're based in New York tells us something, doesn't it? Because many other journalists are there too. There's a sense that this is a hub you have to, where you have to be.
So I would say a lot of the media in the U.S., at least the national media, is concentrated in New York and then, of course, in Washington, particularly those reporting on politics. And there is a bit of a sense that they may be out of touch with what's happening elsewhere in America.
I mean, just as an aside, in New York, do you run into many Trump supporters?
It's not very common, I have to say, particularly living in Manhattan. Mm. It's strongly Democratic and strongly, if you look at the maps of voting, I mean, really strong support for Hillary in the election.
So, Shannon, are some media outlets, as a result of all of this coming to the fore, are they having a rethink?
Yeah, I think there's been kind of a lot of questioning, self-questioning. And also, I think people are looking, the media is looking at this landscape in the U.S. where we have a really starkly divided population. So, you know, just as in New York, you're unlikely to run into a Trump supporter, there are plenty of places elsewhere in the country where you're unlikely to run into Democrats. And there's a sense that people have self-sorted into these kind of ideological bubbles where they only encounter people who think like them. And so you have media organizations that are saying, what can we do to try to expose our readers or our listeners to different points of view? What can we do to try to overcome some of these divides that are really widening?
And I'm going to get to that in just a moment. But of course, I can't help but think that places that have got, say, public broadcasting systems like the BBC or the ABC, I think there's also evidence emerging that that tends to counteract this strong sense of identity affiliation with the vote.
I mean, I think anywhere where you sort of have outlets that are geared at a national audience that are operating in the public interest, that can be definitely a countervailing pressure. And of course, we do have public media here. We have publicly funded radio. We have publicly funded broadcasting on television. It's not funded to the degree that I believe it's funded in other countries.
It's not institutionalized either, I don't think, in the same way.
Right. Actually, the very fact that it is publicly funded has made it a political target. So here we have NPR, National Public Radio, and, in the budget that Donald Trump has proposed, he wants to slash funding for public broadcasting that would include public radio. And there's a perception that, it gets government funding and therefore it is left-leaning in a way.
Yeah. So tell us then about some of these changes that are in the wings. For instance, tell us about New York Public Radio's 100 Days project. This is Trump's first 100 days, of course.
That's right. The local public radio station here in New York, in partnership with The Economist and Minnesota Public Radio, had this show that ran for the first 100 days of Trump's presidency, so starting in January. It was five nights a week, and it was a live call-in show. So this is, a real throwback to the early days of radio. The idea that you're listening, there's a host, they have some topics, and they invite callers. And WNYC, the radio station here in New York, what they did was they set a lineup five nights a week, bringing together hosts from across the political spectrum. And what struck me as one of the most interesting parts of this is their Wednesday night host is a guy called Charlie Sykes. And Charlie is a conservative, a Republican, was a supporter of Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House.
And he has this great line that he's adamant that people need to be able to say, I've never heard it put that way, and that's almost the hallmark of success. What we're going to hear now, this program is called Indivisible, very clever, with these rotating presenters. We're going to hear just part of this program, not with Charlie Sykes, but with another presenter.
I'm Kerry Miller, and I'm bringing you the finale of Indivisible from WNYC and Minnesota Public Radio. On Thursdays, I've listened to what you've said about American identity, who you are, and what's important to you.
I can't even bring up the fact that I remotely support Trump because of the hostility that comes my way.
I'm not going to be ashamed of being a Democrat.
I'm a trucker. I am educated. I'm a trucker. I'm a veteran. And I voted for Trump.
Those of us who were not in support of Trump have to remain quiet because they'll assume we're heretics. They'll assume we're abortion-loving, left-leaning, crazy people.
I'm pro-environment. I'm pro-Medicaid and food stamps. My kids are all on Medicaid. I have been on food stamps in the past. I'm pro-immigration, but I'm also pro-life.
I think we're at this point where both parties really need to focus on what is it going to take to captivate those of us in the millennial generation and what changes need to be made.
Wow, what an amazing array. And that terrific invitation, what is it going to take to captivate those of us in the millennial generation? Now, that series has ended now that the 100 days has passed, but WNYC is now followed with another program, I understand, called The United States of Anxiety. What's the brief of that one?
Yeah, so one of the hosts from Indivisible is going to be continuing on, and that's looking at sort of culturally divisive topics. People here talk a lot about the culture wars. So this is where politics sort of spills over into social issues. The idea is extending this kind of conversation, inviting people with different opinions, different beliefs, to be able to come on air and express them and disagree with each other, but in a civil way, and not in sort of the fighting you might see that happens, particularly on the internet.
Look, tell us about other initiatives, if you would. The Guardian, for instance, in the UK, doesn't hide its, I suppose you could call them, left of centre tendencies. Tell us about their burst your bubble concept.
Yeah, so this is something that The Guardian and a few other organisations are also doing. Again, the idea is, they're thinking maybe their readers are mostly reading content that's pretty similar to what they would already be exposed to in The Guardian. So, they're reading other liberal, left-leaning publications. So they have they post this this regular column called Burst Your Bubble that links to five conservative articles that they describe as worth reading to expand your thinking. So it's trying to get an alternative points of view. The New York Times here in the U.S. has a similar column. It's called Right and Left. So they'll round up reactions to things. So this, last week after Trump fired James Comey, the head of the FBI, they had sort of, here are three articles from people on the right talking about it. Here are three articles from people on the left. And here's a couple from people in the middle.
And BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed got into the picture too?
Yeah, but BuzzFeed's project is a little bit different. It's called Outside Your Bubble. You see, bubble is a very common word used around this. I think it's an apt metaphor, right? They have this project. What it does is they publish a story, and then they'll track how it's being discussed on social media. So how it's being received on Twitter, what people are saying about it on Reddit, what people are posting on Facebook. And then they'll take some of those comments and sort of describe them in what's meant to be a bit of a neutral way. So maybe, if there's sort of a heated rhetoric around it, they'll say, some people are criticizing this for this reason. And they'll put it in a box at the bottom of the story. And what they're saying is, they're really devoted to a level of transparency in how they report. And then, explaining how the pieces that they've reported are being received. And to let people know that, you may have thought this about this article, but actually there's a lot of people online who think something very different than
you. And there are some fascinating apps too. What's this red across the aisle? What does the aisle refer to?
So in the U.S., when we talk about we'll talk about politicians reaching across the aisle, and that's when they're working, when you see Democrats and Republicans working together, it's literally a reference to in Congress, the parties sit on, when they sit in the chamber, they sit on opposite sides of an aisle. And so Read Across the Aisle is an app that tracks which news outlets you're reading, and it'll sort of send you a prompt. It'll say, I see you're reading a lot of content from The Huffington Post and Salon. We've determined that those outlets are fairly left-leaning. Why don't you check out a couple articles from Commentary and the National Review, which are more right-leaning, to try to balance out your news consumption. Yeah, so you get a sense across.
And Facebook's joined in this too.
There's a browser extension that somebody has made that uses Facebook. It's not Facebook itself.
Awesome.
But if you install this browser extension, it's called Escape Your Bubble. And you can say, I'm a Democrat who wants to hear more about things that Republicans are interested in. And it will insert stories into your Facebook feed from right-leaning outlets, and it will do the same for left-leaning outlets as well. The idea being you might not follow these publications, but they probably have something to say that you might be interested in.
Just, well, the more things change, the more they stay. It's just the sort of the benefit of the old generalist newspaper, which I think is one of the great underrated hallmarks of the generalist newspaper, that it forced you to bump into things you otherwise wouldn't have. But maybe we're finally working that out. Shannon Bond, thank you very much indeed for that overview.
Thanks for having me.
And Shannon Bond is the Financial Times US media correspondent. And part of her writing just is showing that this amazing turmoil that we reported on earlier in the program is actually having one very good consequence. It's driving a much greater interest in the news for the cable outlets in particular, for the digital take-up for the New York Times and the Washington Post, that viewership at the top three US cable news networks, Fox News, MSNBC and CNN, is 31% higher in the year to date from the same period in 2016, and that it's actually contributing some real money to their parent companies. It's not nothing.